The word sadhu means awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, so can the monitors please select you?
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.
Here we go. Excellent. So, learning how to meditate, it's the easiest thing in the world. It's just learning how to do nothing. And to allow, not to make the mind peaceful, but let your mind be peaceful. And we use a lot of kindness. If you use force, you will find, you'll never find any peace in life. Just frustration when you can't get what you want. Some years ago, somebody said the problem of their life was this, that they know this is where they need to be, and this is where they are. And it's so hard just trying to get themselves up to where they want to be. And I said, the solution is so easy. If this is where you are, and this is where you want to be, instead of moving where you are to where you want to be, move where you want to be down to where you are. Problem solved. So it's learning how to be at peace with yourself as you are, without trying to change anything at all. Because once you try and change anything, get somewhere, do something, it's more stress. Haven't you got enough stress already in life? And then you want to meditate and make more stress. It's enough. This is relaxation time. Just learning to be where you are, instead of always wanting to be somewhere else. It's called peace, calm, kindness. And if you want to know what kindness is, it is a title of one of my books, Opening the Door of Your Heart to This Moment. Even today, my driver said to me, "Have a wonderful day, Ajahn Brahm." And I said, "No, I will not follow your orders." That was true, wasn't it? And so if you really want to be kind to somebody, you say, "Have a wonderful day or a terrible day. Whichever day you want is fine by me." That's opening the door of your heart to life as it is. So that is what real kindness is, instead of forcing everyone to be happy. And it's an old story, but it's so true. When people always try so hard to be happy or to be healthy, you put so much stress on your body, it makes you sick. A lot of people get so sick trying to be healthy. It's true, you know. It's too much stress on you. We get so miserable trying to be happy. So instead of trying to be happy, just be. Allowing this moment to be. Another book has got this title, don't know if you've seen this yet, Rachel, a small book, Happy Every Day. And people have said, how can you be happy every day? And what about night time? Well, I say happy every day means night time. How can you be happy every day? It's so simple. If you're miserable, if you're grumpy, if you're upset, don't try and change it. Be happy to be miserable. And when you're happy to be miserable, happy to be upset, then you can be happy every day and every night as well. So simple. To get the message, stop trying to change things, and instead just allow these things to be, let them be, and then you get so peaceful that you realize the secret of happiness is not trying to be happy. Even if you're grumpy, open the door of your heart to that. It's normal, wonderful. Let it be. Or being sick. There's nothing wrong with being sick. It's part of life. Everyone gets sick. I get sick. You get sick, Rachel? You get sick of my jokes, I know that. So it is. Yes. You do. Okay, you admit that. Okay. Oh my goodness. What about the bank robber jokes? You know the bank robber joke?
No, go for it.
Okay. Three bank robbers. They robbed a bank late at night. And they ran out of the bank. I can't resist telling jokes, so just get this out of the way so you know that can carry on with meditation. Three bank robbers robbed the bank and they rushed out of the bank. And just as they rushed out, a police car just happened to be passing by. So the police car chased them, they ran into the only place they thought they could hide was in a local park. And they each climbed up a tree. And a policeman saw them rushing into the park, so they got out of their car and went into the park. It's really dark. And they looked up in the tree and they saw this dark shape up in the tree. So they shone their flashlight. Said, "What's that? What's that?" And the bank robber, thinking quickly, said, "Meow, meow." And people said, "Oh, it's only a cat." So they went to the next tree where another bank robber was hiding. And they saw the flashlight, another dark shape. And they went, "Woohoo, woohoo, oh, it's only an owl." I can't do owls that way, well, but it's good enough. That's all you're going to get. Ooh. That's only an owl. And they went to the third tree, and that's where the other bank robber was hiding. He saw how the other two escaped, so when they shone the light at him, they saw a dark shape. "What's that?" And he said, "Moo." You haven't heard that for a while before. Yeah. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So, meditation. What are you came here for? Okay, that's what you can remember now. So, yeah. Those of you can leave now if you will. But anyway, for meditation, it's only how to be peaceful, only about to be happy with what you have. So, what we do, we sit down, we relax our body. Don't try and control the body, make it all stiff. If you need to lean back, lean back. If you need to put your legs out, legs out. Just make it nicely relaxed. Now, it's not such an easy thing to relax the body. Because a lot of times we have some tension inside, very often. So, we have to be mindful, aware of our body. Body is always telling us if it's getting tired or stressed, but most of us are too busy to really notice it. So now we put all our attention into our body. How's it sitting? How's it feeling? And it's an amazing thing in mindfulness with meditation, how when you're aware of how your body is, how you can actually manipulate it, and how you can learn just to really relax the body. I mean, literally deeply relax it. So if you can imagine just like a string or like a rubber band being pulled on two ends, that's called stress. And much of your body is like to be pulled this way and pushed that way, so much stress and tightness in your body. And so how do you release that stress? You let go of both ends. So all the muscles, all the tendons, everything is just relax. You're not pulling and pushing it. You're not struggling and stressing and wanting things. That's what pulls and pushes things. So instead we become so aware of our body, we just let it go. Relax. No tightness. No tension. Just letting the body be as the body wants to be. And you feel that. And once you do that, your body feels just so relaxed. And just learning this much, as I often say, really helps you when you want to go to sleep at night and you can't with insomnia. The reason people have insomnia, they try so hard to go to sleep. That's why they can't. So the trick with insomnia, just relax, let it be. Many people come on my retreats. Long retreats. I gave a long one in Bangkok just a few days ago, and people were complaining. After the meditation, they went back to their rooms, they couldn't go to sleep. And I told them, "Well, look, you know, in the morning I've been watching you, when you're meditating, you're all asleep." So, it's obvious the trick. I told them, when you go to bed, don't try and go to sleep, try to meditate, you fall fast asleep. When you're in meditation room, try to go to sleep and you'll be faster and you'll be awake. Try reverse psychology. If you try to meditate, you get fall asleep. If you try to go to sleep, you're awake. So stop trying. Just let things be. Be here. Now, in order to let things be, it's also important that we get out of the prison of the past and the future. This is the two jails. We go from one to the other in our life, always imprisoned by the memories of what happened earlier. My goodness, it's finished, it's done with. If you were hurt by somebody, what they said today or what they did, you had some bad news or whatever else happened. For me, I only allow bad news to come once. And I don't remember it. On my tablet, I don't have a computer, I have a little tablet. My favourite button is called delete. If I get an email which I don't like, I delete it. I don't save it. If it's a nice email, you know, people say, oh, what a great joke that was today, oh, I'll save that. So if you do have the past, save the wonderful memories, the happy memories. But what do people do? They just save the bad, the terrible memories. I've been to people's houses and I've seen that your photographs on the wall. What photographs do you have on the wall? A lot of times your marriage. I've never yet gone to a person's house and seen a photograph of the divorce proceedings in the Supreme Court. They don't have photos of divorce. I've seen them when they're on holiday in exotic locations. But I've never yet seen a photograph of you stuck in the traffic going to work on Monday morning. I've seen photos of people graduating if you went to a college. I've never yet seen a photograph of somebody at home doing their homework. You only take photographs of happy memories. And you put them in your house because they encourage you, inspire you. Why in our brain do we only keep the unhappy memories? That is stupid. So, find that delete button in meditation. It's called letting go. Delete, delete, delete. So if any bad memory comes up in your meditation, remember, delete. Good memory comes up, oh yeah, that's good. I can hang out there for a little while, give myself some inspiration. Bad memory, delete. Same with the future. People have all these bad expectations of what's going to happen next. Something terrible is going to happen. Something awful, I can feel it. No, it isn't. If you think like that, you actually make it happen. I've seen that so many times. What people are afraid of, they make happen, they create it. So instead we look at the future with a very positive mind. Just like we delete all the bad fantasies of the future, delete, but a good fantasy of the future, a good expectation or hope, keep that. So you have a happy, more joyful mind. And you find that if you look at the past and the future with a bit of wisdom and some kindness, giving the future the benefit of the doubt. Yes, it may be terrible, but it may not happen. Give it the benefit of the doubt and you will find you actually create much better outcomes for the future with hope instead of fear. Fear is what kills people. Hope is what keeps them alive and keeps the world prospering. When it's almost, you wonder, how can you hope? Well, why not? Fear creates is what it expects. So we look at the future with wonderful hope. A nice thing is going to happen. Somebody's going to laugh at my jokes. That's what I always think. Yeah, sometimes it happens. Very rarely, but today it did. There you go. My hope came true. So, past and the future are prisons. And the reason they're prisons is because we keep the negative stuff, the fears and the bad memories. So don't live in prisons. Live in beautiful resorts. So the past is only good memories, future is only hopes. Good stuff. And then it's much easier for you to let both go so you can be peaceful. because good memories, they don't create any business, they're just inspiration. Bad memories have to be fixed up. Bad thoughts for the future have to be dealt with. Beautiful ones, you can leave them alone, and they just leave you with a smile. So that way we can come into this wonderful place we call the present moment. And sometimes I don't pronounce it correctly, and I say not the present moment, but the pleasant moment, because it is the same. Just to be here is not as bad as you think. If you can come into this present moment, it's just a wonderful place to hang out, just to be. Simile which I've given recently was that when you first come into this present moment, it might not be as comfortable when you first come into the present moment. It's like on the journey of life, always moving, going, solving problems, getting stuff done. You get so tired, and the only place you can rest is like a cold stone bench. That's the present moment when you first stop and sit down. At least it's a place to sit down. But the longer you sit on that stone bench called the present moment, the more warm it becomes, and the softer it becomes, the smoother it becomes, until after a few minutes that bench becomes like a sofa in your house. That's the best simile I can have when you come into the present moment. At first, you know, you have to be a bit of endurance, maybe just stay there a little bit longer than you want, because after a while it becomes really comfortable. And you really get into it. This is really nice. Don't have to do anything for the future, nothing of the past. I'm actually relaxing, being here. And it becomes, the longer you sit on that present moment bench, the more happy, delightful it becomes. And when it starts to get delightful, it also means that all these worrying thoughts, which drive people nuts, that all that thinking, which is mostly about the future, mostly about the past, and if you have no past and future because you're happy just being here, you find that the thoughts vanish. You're just happy. Just like that, being silent. No words, just being here. Enjoying the great delight and profound silence of now. And you have a wonderful rest. And the more you do that, the more that you recognize your brain gets brainwashed, gets trained into learning how to be peaceful in this moment, how to be still. And you find that you don't need to go over to Bali, cost lots of money, to be able to get a nice piece of rest and relaxation. All you need to do is get in your car and come to Club Med Armadale. Club Meditation Armadale. Very cheap, and just get more relaxation than if you go all the way to some resort somewhere. So, this is how we meditate, just in brief. And I will be leading the meditation as we go along, so you don't need to remember anything. I do all the work, you just have to do what you're told. Easy, like a school. Okay, so now we can begin. So, I am going to sit down on the floor. The lights, action. Crikey. Better be careful what I say. Is that going to be sent to a lawyer afterwards?
Since the website and a million people.
A million people, I just said a million. Very good. Okay, enough messing around. So, if you like to, you've already done it, you've already closed your eyes. The reason we close our eyes is because that makes the awareness stronger, because we're not distracted by visual data. Instead, we can feel more with our eyes closed. So first of all, feel your body. Get to know it. How is it sitting right now? Ask your legs if they need to be moved, adjusted. And once you ask a question, it's a very useful way of arousing this thing we call mindfulness. You ask a question of your body, you get an answer. You become aware. Legs, are you okay? Listen to that answer and act accordingly. Bottom, on the chair or on the cushion for those sitting on the floor. Bottom, are you comfortable? Now I realize that my cushion needs to be adjusted, so I'm doing that. And if you need to adjust to fidget, please do so. Back, how are you? Do you need to be stretched? No, there's no correct posture for everybody. If you need to lean back, lean back. If you want to lean forward, lean forward. To the side, it doesn't really matter. You find out by mindfulness what is the most pleasant, comfortable posture for you. And then your hands can be on your knees, they can be in your lap, wherever your hands feel comfortable. And then ask your shoulders, are they tense or are they loose? There's a lot of tightness in people's shoulders. So see if you can imagine like a group of strings. The muscles in your shoulders, and they're being held tight, pulled at either end, so they're stressed. And imagine, just visualize letting go of both ends of those strings in your shoulders, so nothing is held tight. Shoulders become loose, they droop, they take on an easy position. Relaxing your shoulders. Then check your head, not leaning too far to the left or the right, not too far forward or too far back. Use the feedback which you can get from mindfulness to find the optimum position for your head. Now I always like to finish off this part of the meditation by being aware of the feelings around my eyes and around my mouth, the muscles there. Because if you are tense, those muscles are tight around your eyes. I learn how to loosen them. Just imagine that nothing is being pulled or pushed. Everything is let go, free. You can feel the muscles loosening as your face relaxes. And having got into a good posture, the next part of the meditation is great for people with diseases or injuries. Now, be aware of that part of the body which is aching, irritating, in pain, or you feel it's just not really balanced. The physical feelings in the body is very hard to put a name to. But you know that that part of your body needs some attention. So zoom into it. Just like on Google Maps, you zoom in to that part of the body which is aching or in pain, which is sick, which is imbalanced. And once you're zooming in to that part of the body, you are mindful of it. That's what mindfulness means. Your awareness is focused just on that part of the body. And now we use the connection of the mind to the body. The way we look at that feeling changes it. So if you look at that feeling with this opening the door of your heart to this moment, letting it be, kindness, embracing that feeling, you'll notice the feeling change. It relaxes, it eases, it gets less painful. But if you look at that feeling with fear and control and rejection, then you find you get more tense and the feeling gets worse. By being mindful, continually mindful for a few minutes on that irritating or painful feeling, you can learn, sometimes by trial and error, but eventually through skill, how to relax that feeling and at the same time heal your body. Deep within. So I'm just focusing on my intestines, which really slight irritation there. Focusing on it. You focus on any part of your body which is irritating or in pain. And see if you can calm that feeling down, pacify it, soften it, calm it. And with some practice, you can take an irritation or pain and move it until it disappears, softening it until it vanishes. Has to be done in this present moment. Past and future, just stop the process. Just right now, in this moment, this feeling. Seeing how it changes gives you the feedback. Mindfulness of the body with kindness teaches people how to really relax inside. And bring their body to amazing health. Relaxing your body. once your body's nicely relaxed, if you wish, you can now move to your emotional world, your mind. How peaceful are you right now? Or how agitated are you? Don't think that one is good, one is bad, just to know. I call that being mindful of your peaceometer, that part of your mind which tells you how peaceful or how agitated. Once you're aware of how peaceful or how agitated you are, just like with the pain or feelings in the body, it gives you feedback. You soon learn how to move that needle of peace or agitation more towards deeper peace. It's being calm, letting go, being in this moment. No past, no future. Not trying to struggle or strive, just being. These are the attitudes which move your mind closer and closer to peace. Once you know what I mean by the peaceometer, it gives you the power to control your peace. You soon learn what agitates you and what makes you peaceful. When the mind is peaceful enough, those of you who have trained to watch your breathing, now is a good time to invite the breath in, so you know with your breathing in, you know whether you're breathing out. And as you breathe in, imagine breathing in peace. If you're sick, breathe in health. Imagining, however you visualize health or peace. Imagine that as every in-breath, breathing in peace, health. And every out-breath, breathe out, let go. Any sickness, any tension, disappointments, breathe that out with every out-breath. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. is our vehicle. Always in this moment, no future, no past. Just here. One breath at a time. It's all you ever have. If there are any thoughts, don't focus on the thoughts. Focus on breathing in peace without let go. And keep any thoughts on the edge of your mind, not in the center. Center should be with the breathing. Breathing in peace without let go. sitting in peace without let go. It's being in this moment, no past, no future. Not trying to get anywhere, that's stress. Not trying to get rid of anything, that's more business. But getting away from it all. May all past, all future make their way out of the building. Just be here. How do you feel? What's it like close to the end of a meditation? Physically, how relaxed are you? Emotionally, how peaceful are you? And how delightful is that peace? No business, no problem. In this present moment, it's the only place you can get away from it all. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's the signal to come out for the meditation. There we go, that's nice. Very good. Thank
you.
Okay, lights. More action. Now, is there any questions this evening in the box? Do you still do that? Question box?
I have a question.
You do?
Yeah.
Again? Okay, what is it, Carl?
Well, the I don't know if this is a bit technical, but the neuroscience research is saying that memories, bad memories, are hardwired into our brains before the age of 6. So I can talk about myself. So I was in a car crash at age of 4, and I still get horrible images coming up. How I react to them has changed. So that's okay. But are they hardwired in, or is there still stuff we can do?
Of course there's stuff you can do.
Okay.
In neuroscience, the word is the plastic brain. The brain which can be wired, rewired, unwired. And this is actually every time that you have like a mindful act, you're aware of letting go. You're aware of kindness. It actually changes the way your brain fires. So it just, you do actually rewire it all the time. So up to the age of 6, it may be very strong wiring, basic wiring, but it can always be changed. And this is actually just how we do it. And of course, you cannot change just those old memories just by suppressing them, just thinking they don't exist. And nor do you try and solve the problem by trying to get rid of it. That doesn't work. That's another way of suppression. It's always the case that you allow them to come up. And when they come up, you don't ever sort of think that they are yours, that this is me, that this is, you don't add these sticky stuff like guilt or even like fear or remorse, you let all of that sort of emotional stuff which makes it stick to you, the glue which makes the past stick to the present, you sort of don't allow that to happen. And then those bad memories, they tend to recede, get weaker. One of the things which I noticed, that the only way to overcome that past is to be kind to it, to soften it, not to be hard on it. And the hardness is when you blame yourself or you blame others. Why did they do that to me? Why did that happen? So when you change your attitude towards it to something more positive, wonderful, I can learn from this. Amazing, you had a car accident, you survived. Wow, how lucky I am. And wow, I really learned so much from that. That is what I mean, and here it comes again, one of my favorite stories, which I repeated thousands of times here, treading in the dog shit. So why do we remember treading in the dog shit? You know, the bad memories. Because I mention the word shit because people think, oh, that's disgusting, that's nasty. It's a bad word. But the smelliest of shit becomes the most powerful of fertilizers. So the simile is, if you do tread in the dog shit, you get cancers, you get problems in business, you really sort of have a lot of trauma in your life. Amazing. You can dig that under your mango tree. I love mangoes. And you will find, after digging it under your mango tree, 1 year later, when you eat those mangoes, and they're so sweet and so juicy, when it starts to drip down your cheek, you must remember what you're really eating. And what are you eating? Dog shit, yeah. It's been transformed into juicy mango. So yeah, that's actually how we use that trauma of the past. We turn it into dog shit. And we turn the dog shit into juicy mangoes. It's incredible just how amazing that really works. You open the door of your heart to it, and that transforms it. Trying to get rid of it just makes it more smelly, more stinky. And I had amazing times with this, Rachel. I've told you all these stories before. I'm not sure if I told you that one of our monks, Venerable Mudita, he had this endoscopy because, you know, he was passing blood for days. As soon as he went to his doctor, you have to have an endoscopy straight away. So he tried to do it through the public hospitals, and it would be about 6 months. He'd probably be dead if he had anything really wrong with him. So he said, okay, we'll just see if we can get you sort of private, just we'll have to pay for it. I'll get some donors to help out. And he got sort of appointed to this private doctor who was one of my students. I knew him when he was really small, and he was the doctor who I saved his career. Because he was the one who came to me once, just his first year at hospital, saying to me, I can't do this anymore, I've got to find another career. Now this is the first year he'd done all the studies, graduated, and got his permission to practice first year in hospital, because he lost his first patient, this young woman, about 23, 24. And now he felt so guilty that he couldn't save her life, especially because he was a man who had to go and tell the husband that he had no wife. They just got married, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier. They're still just, you know, right in the middle of the best times of their marriage. Or even worse, to say that his two children had no mother. And that just hurt him so much. You can imagine what that must be like. You know, you have to pass that news on to this grieving man, you know, his life has totally been upturned. It just hurt so much. And he felt responsible, because he was the doctor in charge. And that, you know, when I told him, and he still remembers the time, the story, so do I. That's when I told him, look, if you think that the purpose of being a doctor is to cure people, you'll fail many times, obviously. And you'll feel the same sense of guilt many times. But if you realize the purpose of a doctor is not to cure people, but to care for people, then you never ever need to feel a failure. You can't always cure people who come to see you in hospital, but you can always care for them. And I said, you never need to feel a failure then. And also, the family of the person who died, they know they've been cared for so well, it actually softens the death. It doesn't take away totally the grief, but at least they know in the last years of their life, or months or weeks, they've been cared for to the max. He got it straight away. And so, you know, he went back to hospital, not to cure, but to care is most important. And he became a specialist. I never exactly knew what specialist he was, but he was the guy who did the endoscopy for Fidel Mudita, the monastery. So, of course, there's no way you could charge. I'd save his career. He wouldn't be a doctor if it wasn't for me. So it's all done for free. So, quick, private. But there's a wonderful little story there. You know, a little bit of good karma. You know, I taught him how to be a doctor, and he came back to me. You know, 1 or 1 month. Didn't need to pay anything. So it's great when you have that. But that's also just about life as well. Don't try and cure your cancer. Care for it. Do you get that? Don't try and cure your husband. Care for him. Because what happens? Well, I told you, it's not just it makes the whole relationship, just takes it to another level, a much more beautiful level. But I said, look, if you make caring more important than curing, that more of your patients will get better than if you try to cure them. Because the caring, the kindness, the softness, that beauty of just looking after one another, looking after things, that is incredibly powerful as a therapy. Care, not cure. So, that's actually that particular guy was caring, not curing, but just afterwards he invited me to his house and his wife. I was actually really surprised because, so what do you do? And she's working in another place which I've influenced. It's, and this is why I tell the story, it's now this organisation called ASSETS, the Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. And this is like people who've been through big stuff. Now these are refugees who've come to Australia, the real refugees, from the refugee camps who've been, you know, to the torture camps. You know, women who've been just raped so many times. Men who've been just incredibly painful torture. And yeah, they come over to Australia, their body is free, but the trauma of their past is intense. It's amazing just how powerful that is. And they're not free. Just like any trauma which you have, like that accident, unless it's been dealt with, you're never free. So, I asked her, they're still teaching the opening the door of your heart simile, which I've taught you before. I said, yeah, it's on the wall. Big picture on the wall. Do they say it came from my jump? I said, no. I don't care, look. As long as it works. And it's one of their therapies, which is really powerful. And I've said it here before, but it's a beautiful simile. This is actually how it works. If you had something really bad happen to you in the past, now you have to do this, you know, when you feel, number one, safe, don't push it, you feel in a safe environment, you feel really, you've got enough energy, you're not too burdened with other things, you feel relaxed as you can be. Sitting down, a bit of meditation just to really relax your soul. Then you do a visual exercise, imagination. You imagine sort of in your chest area like a Valentine's Day heart. When I say imagine a heart, you've got to be specific, because people try and imagine one of these little blobs with tubes coming out of all ends, which is like a real heart. It doesn't really work if it's like a real heart. If you've been a doctor or a surgeon or even a nurse, then you know what a heart actually looks like. No, it doesn't work as well as like, you know, the heart, you know, pointed down the bottom with a bit of a sort of a cleavage in the top. So, you know, that type of heart, the Valentine's Day heart. So imagine this big heart in your chest. Just imagine it. Then you imagine these two big doors on it. And then you imagine the doors opening. And there's you. The part of you you like. The part of you which you're comfortable with. The part of you which is already in your heart. And then you look down, and outside of you is those little Rachels, those little Ajahn Brahms, who've had some terrible, terrible experiences. You know, the little girl who was raped, the man who was tortured again and again and again, every time thinking he would die, pain which was unendurable. That person is outside, always trying to escape from them, forget them, get rid of them. And then you imagine a little ladder coming down, going all the way to the bottom, and you at the top. That part of you which you are happy with, which you are comfortable with. You look down those other yous which you've kept outside, and you say, come up, come in to my heart. And it's just one of the most amazing experiences, highly emotional, takes a lot of courage. And the little girl who was raped walks up the stairs, having been rejected for such a long time, not loved, tried to get rid of. She comes up, and when she makes it to the top, the other part of you embraces her. Come in. You're part of me. You're who I am. The part which was tortured embraces the other part of you. And it's an amazing experience. A catharsis. You're at one with yourself. Reconciled. You come in. Because the problem is rejection, pushing out. It's not part of me. And I've seen, and I haven't seen men, because women have done this. They're incredible, powerful women. You know, you really respect them. Because, you know, they've been through stuff which I've never been through, I never want to be through. They come out the other side. Wow. And the story which I say happened in Anuladhara temple is one of those women. She was telling me just, you know, what happened to her in detail. And there was this one young man next to her, you know, listening. She said, "That's terrible, what happened to you?" And then this woman turned on him and said, "What do you mean, terrible? It's who I am. It's made me who I am. You've not got any right to say it's terrible." And at that, I realised that, you know, she was free. She dug in the dog shit, and really dug it, and she changed that, you know, into just mangas. Incredible woman. So that's actually how we deal with trauma. Bring it in, pushing it out. Being afraid of it, rejecting it, that's a tough one. That means it's never resolved. But that simile, it actually was working. I was very happy that the little simile which you develop over the years is now being used as one of the three or four main therapies in this little group. It's still being used, because it was quite a few years ago when I went there and taught them that. And this, the wife of this endo... whatever, colleges or something, you know, the bum doctor. It's much easier to say than some Greek word. The bum doctor's wife. That's still being used. So I'm very happy about that, and it's still working. Mm. So that, I mean, that is extreme cases, but it works. So what about just hard cases? It works on those too. So you don't try and get rid of it. You don't try and reject it. You don't even try and demean it by saying it's terrible, it's bad. Because by saying that, it's, you know, you're demeaning yourself. It's who you are. Embracing it. Transforming it. And the catharsis happens. It's amazing. Those are the sorts of things which you learn from meditation. That's what you do. And amazing, things come up. If anything does come up in the meditation, you know, they're just a really old memory comes, for goodness sake, let it come up. Mm-hmm. Don't push it away. But let it come up, but don't get entangled in it. See if you can just, you know, stand back and just watch it. To actually to learn from it. Because once you get entangled in it, it's just like the old emotions come up and you can't really understand it. It just possesses you. Rather than just stand back and watch it at a distance. And the similar use for that is the old watching the movies or watching the sport. I don't watch those movies or the sport, but when I'm on an aircraft, I watch other people watching the movies. That's really funny. And you see it right in there. But it's those things. It's only just light on the screen because you get entangled into it. And one of the best stories was walking through the airport in Singapore, and there's a big screen in Terminal 3 with the football on. Oh, it's always got some football on, the English Premier League. And there's always guys sitting there, and every now and again you wait only about 5 minutes and they stand up, offside! They say, no! They're shouting at the screen. And that's English Premier League. It's been played in England. Doesn't matter how loud you shout in Singapore, the referee will not be able to hear you. And anyway, it's a replay. It's all you
even worse.
But people do that, they get really entangled in it. And I often wonder about the psychology of that. Psychology is that when you're watching a football like that, even if, you know, you do that here in Perth, you're watching like Fremantle Dockers from home, why don't you actually start watching that TV? You actually psychologically, you're on the stands, you're at the ground. You actually believe that. It sucks you in. That's what happens in the movies. When you watch the movie, you know, you're actually in there, in England with James Bond about to save the world again, whatever's happening. You actually get dragged in, you actually believe you're right there. That's the psychology. You get sucked in and entangled in it. So that's actually the... when you understand how that works, yeah, you do that, you have some fun. Guys like watching the soccer and getting excited and shouting at the screen, so, you know, why not? At least they know what they're doing. Same watching a movie. There's one of the disciples comes every week to feed us, and she told me that, you know, she's from Thailand, that her mother, Chinese Thai, would always go to the Chinese movies once a week, when they could only go once a week on the old days, and they'd always come back red-eyed. Every movie was a tearjerker. And it's always the same plot with a few variations. No, the boy meets girl, they fall in love, and either they come from different sides of the track, so the families won't let them marry, or the Imperial Army goes to war and he gets conscripted, or there's always something happens. And even though they get so close to getting married and living happy ever after, the Chinese movies are the total opposite of Disney. They never ever live happily ever after. Never. And as a result of that, her mother would come back every week red-eyed, having just gone through another big box of tissues. I said, why do you do that? Well, because I like to cry. And for guys, that's incomprehensible. But for women, you can understand why. Anyway, this is actually getting entangled. So, you know, you like getting entangled. You want a good cry, fine. You want to get scared, go watch a ghost movie. But at least you know what you're doing. But if you don't want to, you've got that choice. You're not getting entangled. And it's the same when those thoughts and memories come up. You've got a choice of getting entangled. You're right back there in the past, in an accident. You're entangled. But if you can just, a little bit of separation, a little bit of distance, and even like little things like feeling the chair, I'm here in Armidale, I feel the chair, I'm not in the car anymore. And that gives you that slight bit of distance, which means you can disentangle, you can see it, but not get reinforcing the emotional content. Almost like seeing it from a distance. And that's where you can really understand it, let it go. So let's just say any old thoughts which come up in the mind. You know, why do thoughts keep on coming up and obsessing people? The reason they keep coming up is because of the emotional entanglement we have. You know, you really want to get sort of afraid. You really want some drama. It's incredible, just, you know, sometimes you want even a monastery. Why do monks argue with each other or have dramas? It's because they get bored when there's no drama. I know that because, you know, we don't have TV, we've got no Korean movies to watch, or no other movies, there's no soap operas to watch, so there's no dramas. So, you know, why do people actually watch these movies or these dramas? Because they haven't got enough drama in their life, I reckon. So they have to watch it on TV. Of course you've got enough drama in your life. What do you want more? Something more to worry about. You know, whether they're going to save the world, whether they're going to get married in the end, or what's going to happen. What's the latest drama? The Game of Thrones. Have you seen that? I haven't got a clue what it is.
No,
haven't seen
no,
it.
No.
Have okay, what else is on TV?
The Vikings.
The Vikings!
Yes.
Is that exciting?
They killed a Ragnar Lothbrok. I don't watch it anymore.
Really? A Ragnar who? Never heard of the guy. A Ragnar Lothbrok. Oh, poor thing. But anyway, whatever happens, why do people watch that? Because we get entangled in it. It's exciting. But, you know, haven't we got enough exciting stuff to worry about? So anyhow, if you want to let go of the thoughts, put some space between you and the thoughts. Don't get entangled, and they're much easier just to let them go. Okay, so that's the trauma. Very good. So if it's a trauma of bad jokes, now that's more difficult to let go of, because that scars you for life, some of the stuff which you've heard from me, Rachel, over the years. Anyway, any comments? Questions from the floor here?
Just one of the two comments from me then. I was listening to a discussion this morning about the number of soldiers who come back with post-traumatic stress and are suiciding in Australia.
Yeah.
Can we get you teaching them?
Excellent, if I'm allowed. Because sometimes people don't allow you to do that. One of the reasons is because I got no qualifications. I went to university to do physics, not counselling. So somebody said, I'm a bit concerned these days about all these mindfulness teachers teaching meditation. Because, you know, you have to go to a course and it costs a lot of money to get qualified. And I can't afford that, so after a while I won't be allowed to teach meditation anymore. Because I'm not qualified.
Yeah.
No, anyway, that'd be great. I mean, it is traumatic, you know, shooting somebody. But, and there's no reason why one cannot sort of overcome that. There's so many people have. There are some people who get traumatized, other people who don't.
Mm.
In the same situation. And it's interesting to know why some people get traumatized, other people do not. One of those reasons is expectations. There was a great study, I'm not sure if you saw that, Rachel. There was a big train crash outside of Paddington years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
Paddington train crash. And many people were killed and injured.
Mm.
And this really sharp psychologist decided to do a follow-up comparing, the government offered free counselling, comparing those people who went for counselling and those people who didn't, to see, you know, if there was any difference. And there was a difference. Those people who didn't go for counselling were far healthier than those people who did. That sometimes that you've got to be careful with counselling, because sometimes you can reinforce people's memories and the negative part of those memories. We just were talking the other day, because we're going to have another bushfire plan made, that we had a huge bushfire over in Serpentine in 1991, hottest day ever in Western Australia at the time. A big bushfire came through, and I was right there in the middle of it, fighting it, and I was interviewed by Channel 7 afterwards.
You remember that?
You remember that, yeah. Front page of the West Australian. But a couple of weeks later, this psychologist from Curtin University came to interview me about trauma. And they were just so disappointed because I didn't have any. So we can't use this, we're wasting our time. You know, because you know, we're just off the scale as monks. And they say, well, even the person that interviewed me on Channel 7, she came back afterwards, because she changed from being on the news to being the producer of a show, because I didn't know what it was, called Daryl Hinch. And she said...
He's now a member of Parliament.
Oh, is he? But anyway, she said that I was really struck by the fact that, you know, I interviewed just right after you escaped from the fire and you weren't scared at all. There's no stress there. And she said, I do this all my life, and that's the first person I've ever seen who's now been in such a situation as so relaxed about it. And I want to invite you on our show. And then, sort of like, I didn't know, a hint show. And many people said, no, don't go on there. He'll tear you apart. He'll make a mincemeat out of you. I was really disappointed. But anyway, I never went. I don't know if that was good or not.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. But, you know, you learn how to let go of these things. Especially the memories of the past. Look at it positive. We escaped. There's no damage. Yeah, lots of trees, they come back again. Part of life. So sometimes it's very easy to think, oh, I've had a trauma. This is going to traumatize me. If that's what you imagine, then it happens. Give people, it may happen, don't deny it, but give another opportunity. Maybe it won't. When you give other opportunities to people, then many people just will take that. They'll just won't be traumatized by it. They won't get angry. When the doctor says to you, or the nurse says, this will hurt, please don't do that. It's stupid. Because if you say that, then it does hurt. Yeah. But it's like, ow! Said, oh yeah, so it hurts with some people, doesn't, you know, one of the unlucky ones. There it goes, but it's afterwards now, it's gone. So be careful of just creating people's responses.